As I was doing some research for this sermon, through the week I decided to look at some secular studies on guilt. What is the secular world, the non-Christian world, saying about guilt? And I came across this so-called Dobby effect, D-O-B-B-Y, the Dobby effect. I'd never heard of it before. And I decided to look into it, and I came across this paper which explained it a bit more. And apparently, this is some elf, a house elf, I believe, from the Harry Potter series. I know nothing about Harry Potter, right? I've never read a book. I've never seen a movie. I know nothing. So forgive me if I go astray here. But based on these scientific papers, they're calling a certain human behavior the Dobby effect. Apparently there's some elf that is always super sorry, always saying sorry, and then punishing himself for what he perceives to have done wrong. Sometimes apparently ironing his hands or burning his ears in an oven, and various actions he takes when he perceives that he has hurt someone else. And the scientists are calling this the Dobby effect because they're seeing it in people. They're seeing that people with unresolved guilt, guilt that does not have an outlet, tend to self-punish. They turn upon themselves in different ways. One of the researchers in one of the papers said this: guilt makes people perform a wide range of tasks to make up for their transgressions. It prompts the transgressor to compensate for their actions by restoring severed social bonds and mending any distress caused by the action. So they then ask this question, though: okay, so somebody's feels they've done wrong or they've harmed someone, they try and compensate for it. But what happens when they cannot make that compensation? When they cannot make up? When they cannot restore these broken bonds? Well, they ask that question. What happens when a person is unable to repair the damage they've inflicted upon others? Well, when the ability to compensate for an offense is not possible, a person is more likely to inflict punishment on themselves. When a compensation outlet is not available, guilt causes people to either deny themselves a pleasure or subject themselves to a penalty. The classic example they gave, which of course I don't know anything about, is when a husband forgets a wife's birthday. And they overcompensate by not just buying a present, but, you know, adding flowers and a dinner and so on and so forth. There's this desire to compensate, to make up. And they go on, and this is the last paragraph I'll read from this paper. We revealed the existence of a Dobby effect by showing that guilty people punish themselves if they have no opportunity to compensate for the transgression that caused them to feel guilty. Self-punishment did not occur if people had an opportunity for compensating the victim of their transgression. It's a fascinating, again, secular study of guilt. And yet, you resonate with it, don't you? It rings true in your own life. It did in mine. I can easily look back on periods of my life when guilt has made me want to compensate, try and make up, try and restore, and then maybe when unable to do so, yeah, exacting a penalty upon myself or denying a pleasure to myself. And it raises this question: if that's what the secular scientists say about guilt as they observe human life, what does the Bible have to say about it? And I'm sure as we've been going through Romans 1 through 3, your sense of guilt at times must have been growing. I know mine was, and it's meant to. because Romans 1 through 3 is really about, as it's put here, stopping every mouth. Verse 19, that the whole world may be held accountable or regarded as guilty before God. However serious the secular researchers view guilt, the Bible views it much more seriously, more serious in its cause. It's caused not just by us breaching our own moral norms. It's caused not by us harming other people, but above all, it's caused by offending God and breaking God's law. So it's more serious in its cause. It's more serious in its symptoms. When we are guilty, when we feel guilt, when we have done wrong and that sense of impending doom comes upon us, it not only affects our concentration, our creativity, our productivity. Again, the science shows that. It not only hinders us from finding any pleasure in life. Again, the science shows us that. But it actually cuts us off from God. It's a serious matter, guilt, isn't it? It's so many serious consequences. So what do we do with it? The scientists say, well, you know, try and compensate. And if you can't compensate, well, I guess if you can get some benefit from self-punishment, self-flagellation, self-denial or whatever, just, you know, go down that path. Is that the best we've got? Well, no, we've got something far, far, far better. Though the Bible views guilt more seriously, it's got a far better, a far greater remedy. And that's what Paul brings before us here in this passage as he answers this question for us. How do we get from guilt to joy? How do we get from guilt to joy? That seems like a long journey, doesn't it? Maybe lifelong. Maybe you're still on that journey. Maybe you wonder, how will I ever get from guilt to joy? Well, there's good news for you in this passage tonight, because Paul shows us here how we get from guilt to joy. And he does it, at least I want to present this evening, through various characters that he introduces us to along the way. Here's the first character. Execute Mr. Goodness. Execute Mr. Goodness. Who is Mr. Goodness? Well, really he doesn't need an introduction. We all know him pretty well, because we're actually born hand in hand with Mr. Goodness. Mr. Goodness tells us how good we are. How, at least you're far better than them, or him or her, or better than you were. Mr. Goodness comes alongside us and he flatters us. He helps us see all our good side and none of our bad side. And he's actually really skillful that whenever we begin to feel guilt, he comes along and says, it's not that bad. And it was really his fault anyway. And there's, you know, you've got lots of excuses for that you can find. So don't, please, just remember, you're good. You're good at heart. This is Mr. Goodness. Well, Paul has been executing Mr. Goodness for us in Romans chapter 1 all the way through to chapter 3 and verse 18. Because he has been first to the Jew, then to the Gentile, then to the Jew and the Gentile, showing us we are not good. He has been executing Mr. Goodness. He has been coming alongside us with the law of God and chopping off Mr. Goodness's head and saying he's a liar. Don't believe a word he says. Listen rather to what the law of God says about who you are. Mr. Goodness is actually Mr. Badness. He's not your best friend. He's one of your worst enemies because he's a liar. And so Paul brings us to this point of executing him, which is the whole point of Romans chapter 1 through Romans chapter 3, verse 18. Romans chapter 3 is really the kill shot. It's the kill shot for Mr. Goodness. And therefore, if you ever feel yourself in that position where Mr. Goodness is your best friend and he's beside you and he's whispering into your ear, you're really good. You've done really well. And certainly, if you compare yourself to most of these other people, you know, you've got nothing to worry about. If you're hearing him, pick up Romans 1 through 3 as like a guillotine to chop his head off and silence his voice because he's telling you lies. The answer to guilt is not Mr. Goodness, because Mr. Goodness is a liar. And the only way to get rid of guilt is through the truth. So let's execute him, put him to the side, and move on. Who's the next person we meet? Well, the next person we meet is Mr. Guilty. And what Paul says to us here is, listen to Mr. Guilty. And it's going to be painful. It's going to hurt your ears. But it is the truth. And that's really what we have summed up to us here in verse 19. Now, we know that whatever the law says, it speaks to those who are under the law, so that every mouth may be stopped and the whole world may be held accountable to God. For by the works of the law, no human being will be justified in his sight, since through the law comes knowledge of sin. So, really, Mr. Guilty walks into the room as Mr. Goodness is lying, dying. Right? He's on the floor, he's wounded, he's bleeding out. And Mr. Guilty walks into this scene and he says, now, I've got the truth for you. It's painful, it's hard, but it's true. By the deeds of the law, you will never be right with God. Trying to be good will never get rid of your sense of guilt. You cannot compensate. Stop arguing. Don't. He said, whole point here is closed mouths. If you've listened to the law enough and properly, you will have no excuse. You will have no defense. You will have no alibi. You will join this whole world with every mouth stopped. Guilt stops mouths. And Mr. Guilt, he really drags us to the law of God, and he shows us Mr. Law, and we'll come back to him, Mr. Law, with two documents. One is precepts to be obeyed and penalties to be suffered. Precepts, laws, God's demands upon us, and the penalties if we fail. And Mr. Law brings these, and he puts them in front of us, and he says, okay, how are you doing? And when we go through the law and we see all the precepts we've disobeyed and then we see all the penalties because of our disobedience, then there's silence, isn't there? It's like, oh no, I'm doomed. That's when Mr. Guilty has done his work. And you know, Mr. Guilty, he has lots of pointing fingers, but he has no helping hands. He comes into our lives to put his finger on certain sore spots, certain sensitive areas. Areas we try and cover up, try and deny, try and minimize, try and hide. He brings them out and he says, that. Nothing to say. That, no defense. That and that. Sometimes it feels like it's just fingers everywhere, doesn't it? But he never offers us a helping hand. All Mr. Guilty can do is leave us more condemned than ever before. But at least it's true. He's got that over Mr. Goodness. He does tell the truth. So who's the third character? At the moment, we don't feel, do we, that we're getting very far along the road from guilt to joy, right? Well, we're about to make some progress, because Paul introduces us to Mr. Righteousness, or Mr. Perfect, which is another word for righteousness. We see that here in verse 21, having killed Mr. Goodness, having listened to Mr. Guilty, having closed our mouths in sense of no defense, but now the righteousness of God has been manifested. Righteousness here, Mr. Righteousness could be called Mr. Perfect or Mr. Law Satisfier. That's what righteousness really means. It's somebody who comes along and says, see these precepts? Give me them. I'll obey them perfectly. And see these penalties that are against your name? You give me them too. And I'll suffer these penalties for you perfectly. He is Mr. Law Satisfier. He is Mr. Compensation. He is the one who makes up, who pays the price. And it's interesting how it says here, the righteousness of God has been manifested. He's speaking of Jesus, isn't he? Jesus now has been made clear. The curtain has been pulled back. The curtain that shrouded him in mystery in the Old Testament has now been pulled back. He's being seen, but notice it says, apart from the law. I mean, that's strange, isn't it? How can you be Mr. Law Satisfier apart from the law? Well, you can't. It doesn't mean that Mr. Law Satisfier satisfied the law without satisfying the law. That makes no sense, does it? What it means is, apart from our law satisfaction. Mr. Law Satisfier satisfied the law apart from our law work, our attempts. He looks at all our attempts to try and make a compensation, make a payment, deny ourselves a pleasure, inflict the penalty, and he says, just put that all to the side as nothing. And let my righteousness, my perfection alone be manifested. And look at what it's called in verse 22. It's called the righteousness of God. You could meditate on that little phrase for years and never fully explore it. The righteousness that's been manifested, made available, that is offered to us, it's not a mere perfect human righteousness. It's the very righteousness of God Himself. What value is that? What infinite value? The righteousness of God. So, it's a gloomy room. Mr. Goodness is dying. Mr. Guilty's there, just hammering us over the head with the law. Mr. Righteousness walks in. Mr. Perfect says, I'm here. You say, but how do I connect? How do I get connected with Mr. Righteousness? I see that nothing of my attempted righteousness is of any help whatsoever here. I see that my attempt to satisfy the law is just, don't even start, don't even begin. But how do I get that righteousness, that Mr. Perfect, into my life as my righteousness? Well, that's the fourth character Paul introduces us to. He says, connect through Mr. Faith. Connect with him through Mr. Faith. Look again at verse 22. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ. For all who believe. This is one of Paul's favorite characters. He loves, loves, loves Mr. Faith. Mr. Faith comes in and he severs the connection with Mr. Guilt. He smashes that connection. He says, you have no more power, you have no more influence, you have no more connection with my life. Mr. Gill, you're gone. And then he comes and he not only severs us from Mr. Gill, he connects us with Mr. Righteousness. Brings Mr. Righteousness into our lives. He smashes the chain of guilt. He connects us with Mr. Righteousness. You see that in verse 25. God put him forward as a propitiation by his blood to be received by faith. This isn't for special believers. It's not for people with special faith. It's not like if you've got enough faith, you can, you know, get over 50%. Mustard seed faith, 1% faith, the very beginning of faith in Jesus transfers the whole of Jesus' righteousness, the whole of his perfection, the whole of his satisfaction to the law to you. These precepts that he perfectly obeyed, he says, they're all yours. That penalty that he perfectly suffered, he says, take that as well as though you did it. All that is mine is now yours. Faith makes that connection. And, you know, sometimes our faith feels like a thread, doesn't it? The thinnest piece of thread. And yet, if there's any connection, the thinnest, the flimsiest, the most microscopic of faith brings the whole of that divine righteousness, the whole of that perfection, over into your life so that you can say, Mr. Righteousness is mine. So it's no wonder Paul loves Mr. Faith. He refers to him a lot in this passage. You'll look again at verse 26. It was to show his righteousness at the present time so that he might be just and the justifier of the one who has faith in Jesus. So we go from guilty, 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 to innocent, innocent, innocent? No, it's better than that. It goes all the way to perfect, perfect, perfect. You have faith. Faith in Jesus. God looks at you tonight and says, my perfect son, my perfect daughter, as perfect as Jesus himself. Take it. Don't resist it. Don't mix it. Just receive it as truth. Connect through Mr. Faith. As the song goes, if you need freedom or saving, he's a prison-shaking savior. If you've got chains, he's a chain breaker. He's a chain breaker. He severs the chains of guilt and he connects us with Mr. Righteousness. We're on the way, aren't we? We're getting further from guilt. We're getting closer to joy. But there's another character we want to meet here, and it's Mr. Boasting. Paul says, evict Mr. Boasting. Look at verse 27. Then what becomes of our boasting? Now, we're all boasters. I have to be honest. Some are a bit more subtle about it, a bit cleverer. But there's something about us, we're boasters. We try and put ourselves up. And Mr. Boasting and Mr. Goodness are really good friends, probably the best of friends. As long as Mr. Goodness is in our life, Mr. Boasting is there too, because he puffs you up, doesn't he? Makes you feel good. Well, Paul asks, okay, well, goodness, Mr. Goodness, he's dying. What about his best friend, Mr. Boasting? Where does he go? What happens to him? He says here, it is excluded. So Mr. Boasting, who's loved being in this life with Mr. Goodness, now finds he has no friends left in this soul. As Mr. Goodness dies, he's kind of, well, what do I do? Paul says, there's a door. Get out. Get out. Leave right now. I don't want you here for a minute longer. You're excluded. You're evicted. You have no place here. We do not have any time for Mr. Boasting. That's the way God saves. He must increase. We must decrease. And therefore, we put him out. Now, sometimes, even after we come to faith, Mr. Boasting and Mr. Goodness, he'll resurrect now and again. And they'll try and sneak into your life. They'll try and come in a back door or through a window. And they'll say, you know, you're not really that bad. You really have some areas that you should be pretty proud about. So they're always going to be sneaking around your life. You have to keep bringing Romans 3 to keep them out. Board up the windows, lock the doors, have special antennae, cameras scanning for them. Don't let them into your property for a second. Evict them. That's actually going to make you happier in the long run, as we'll see. What about Mr. Law? Sixth character. Well, Paul says, honor Mr. Law. If you look again as we go on here, verse 31, do we then overthrow the law by this faith? So, Mr. Faith has come in, he's chased away Mr. Guilt, Mr. Boasting, Mr. Goodness. What about Mr. Law? Do we throw him out too? Paul says, no. We honor him. We don't let him play any part in our salvation, but our salvation honors the law. It doesn't set aside God's law. It fully satisfies it. And therefore, Paul says, do we then overthrow the law by this faith? By no means. On the contrary, we uphold the law. Every other salvation, so-called in this world, will compromise the law of God. It'll lower the standard. It'll lower the bar. It'll say that law's not important. This law's not important. Morality, that's not important. This law, this salvation honors the law so that God is not just the justifier, but he's also just in justifying. He's not reduced as a holy and a just God. So we honor Mr. Law. A lawless salvation. That's a hopeless salvation. It's not a salvation at all. Who do we want to meet last? Enjoy Mr. Joy. Enjoy Mr. Joy. So, who's left here? Mr. Goodness, gone. Mr. Guilt, gone. Mr. Boasting, gone. Let's ask Mr. Law. He's still in the house. Are you happy? Mr. Law says, I'm really happy. Because all my precepts have been obeyed and all my penalties have been suffered. Mr. Law is joining the party here. What about Mr. Righteousness? Let's ask Mr. Righteousness, are you happy? He says, I'm really happy. Because I've transferred all my value to another again. And I love doing that. I love it when somebody just lays hold on me and says, that righteousness, that perfection, that's my salvation. I am really happy too. What about Mr. Faith? Mr. Faith, are you happy? I'm really happy because I've now just severed another soul from Mr. Guilt, and I have connected another soul to Mr. Righteousness. I'm really, really happy. So, Mr. Law's happy. Mr. Righteousness is happy. Mr. Faith is happy. Let's have a party. Let's celebrate. Let's rejoice in this salvation. Who could be happier than the soul that's experienced this? Nothing makes God happier than people being happy with his salvation. Nothing. Nothing makes him happier than your happiness and his salvation. You're high-fiving Mr. Law, Mr. Righteousness, Mr. Faith, saying, these are my friends. So we asked at the beginning, how do we get from guilt to joy? We said, execute Mr. Goodness. We want to listen to Mr. Guilty. We want to receive Mr. Perfection. We want to connect through Mr. Faith. We want to evict Mr. Boasting and honor Mr. Law, but enjoy Mr. Joy. Get from deadly guilt to healthy joy through faith in Jesus. That's the pivot. That's what changes this picture. From deadly guilt to healthy joy, the pivot is Jesus Christ alone. Guilt is damaging and deadly. You know, you think of all the mental and emotional disorders that are in the world. And this is a complex issue. There's a physical dimension to it, genetic sometimes, but a lot of it is related to guilt. A lot of depression has a guilt component, a lot of anxiety, a lot of OCD, a lot of eating disorder. It's like a gloom that comes over a person that makes them want to punish themselves or deny themselves pleasures. You would say, at times, a secular way of trying to compensate for guilt. And it will never work. It'll never work. Ever. But this will work. The gospel is health-giving and life-giving. In that paper that I was reading on guilt, it said that the average person spends 5 hours a week with guilt feelings. I don't know how they measure these things, but 5 hours a week. And it's kind of like a non-stop snooze alarm. It's like guilt arises, they manage to switch it off. But then 5 minutes later, it arises again. The memory, that thing you did, that habit you might still be engaged in. It keeps ringing an alarm. It keeps buzzing. Keeps nagging, keeps annoying, keeps depressing, keeps terrifying, keeps you down, keeps you in the darkness, keeps you sad again and again and again. It's ruining your productivity, your creativity, your concentration. It's affecting everything. It's coming into every relationship. You're maybe lashing out at others around you. You're maybe lashing out at yourself. You're maybe lashing out at God. There's mental and physical consequences to it. And all the time, here is the remedy. Here is the answer. Here is how to get from guilt to joy. Okay? Those of you who are Christians, how long should you spend feeling guilty? Or how deep do you think your guilt should be? Maybe you're saying, well, I should feel more guilty. I should feel guilty for longer. What's that? That's a secular way of handling guilt. That is purely secular. I tell you the gospel way. How long should you feel guilty? As long as it takes you to get to Christ. That's it. Once you're there, no more guilt. No more guilt. You don't need it. How deep should you feel your guilt? As deep as it takes to get you to Jesus. And once you get him and connected again, no more guilt. He doesn't want you to stay in guilt. He wants you to connect with Mr. Righteousness and experience joy and happiness. And this is one of the greatest spiritual battles we can engage in. And most of us have many losses in this battle. We've not even really begun to win this battle. There is no merit in guilt. None. There's nothing atoning in guilt. Use it only to get to the atonement. And once there, There is merit. There is satisfaction. There is perfection. There is joy. And you can have that right now. Right now. By faith. Don't say, well, I should wait a day or two or another week. Put things right. No, don't. Right now. Connect with Mr. Righteousness by faith. And everything he has is yours. That's how to get from guilt to joy. Let's pray. Perfect God, give us the perfect joy of your salvation by giving us your perfect righteousness. In Jesus' name, amen.